Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 337. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. Just another day, another podcast. So looking forward to some more player breakdowns and some that are struggling. So it's going to be a good episode, I think.
Yeah, we got a good mix today. It's about half major league, half minor leagues, obviously. Monday episode, so we got 3 up, 3 down with pitchers this week. And we also got 6, 7, 8 or so major leaguers to discuss right now. A few which are doing well, a few that aren't doing so well. This is September 8th right now. I was just looking. This is our 79th podcast of the 2024 year. So
nice.
Time we get through the rest of the – we'll go down to one episode after the season for a little bit. Then we'll probably ramp back up in December. We should get to 100 this year. I think we'll be right around 100 by end of the year, even with going down to one for, you know, 2 months or so in October, November. But yeah, we got a little under 2 months till AFL. That'll be fun. Actually, about a month and a half. We'll be out there on the 28th of October during Halloween week. So that'll be very much looking forward to that. I still got a couple more games to get to here in the minor league season. I know, Chris, low A, high A wrapped up this week. I got one more week, or maybe it's even longer than that because Portland's in the postseason, so maybe even a little bit extra baseball, but at least one more week of the regular season. This upcoming week, we got, who's coming into town? Binghamton coming into town, so maybe I'll get some Jonah Tong, some David Sandlin from Portland again. So a few more live looks before the season ends, and then we'll be off to the AFL. But again, good mix of stuff today. But before we get into that all, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect and FYPD rankings. And, of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Week one, we're in the middle of it right now. Got so much great fantasy football content over on RotoBaller, and of course, plenty of baseball and other sports as well. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, but before we get into some of those players we're talking about here, I figured we'd take a few minutes here, 5-10 minutes, just to talk about if you're in a dynasty league right now, or if maybe multiple, and your teams are out of it, and you know, you're not in playoff contention or contention for money or something like that if you're in a roto league, what should you be doing right now? If your team is kind of toiling in like 7th, 8th, 9th, or lower, what are some things that you could be doing here over the last few weeks to really gear yourself up and gear your team up for 2025 and beyond? So Chris, any thoughts on that right now?
Yeah, I guess every league's a little different as far as when and how they allow ads to take place. And some leagues in head-to-head, they don't allow ads for non-playoff teams. If they do, I think it's always a weird debated topic. It's frowned upon for a non-contending team to still be making moves. If the settings allow so, all's fair. If you can set up your team for next year, it's a huge advantage. In a roto league, it doesn't matter if you're out of contention. You should still be playing the game, and you should still be making roster moves that can set you up for 2025 and beyond. And I think this is the prime time to do it. There's major leaguers breaking out, and fantasy football started. So people are checking out and missing some of this, and it creates an opportunity for you to buy in and get an advantage. And I wouldn't fault anybody, as long as it's in the rules, for making those kind of moves. And I think that being active on the wire is huge this time of year. I think that is what being active on the wire is what wins you leagues, but especially at this point in the season, because there's been countless pitching MLB breakouts, or at least like it looks like it could be a breakout, that have happened since the month of August started. It's a chance for you to pounce. Does it stick next year? Maybe not, but shoot, like taking shots on Bowden Francis or Davis Martin or somebody like that is a huge piece. Most trade deadlines have passed at this point, so it's harder to make those moves trade-wise, but I think looking for prospects that could debut or break camp with their respective teams next year, looking for and identifying those prospects that have been really good down the stretch, because that's a precursor to a breakout. Did a player make a change? We're going to talk about one of them in the ups of the three up, three down. But I mean, there's pitching prospects that have been traded that have made tweaks to their arsenal, and now all of a sudden they look like just a different player. So it's opportunity, and it's always at opportunity cost. So I think getting in on these players now is really the way to go. So it's just capitalizing, and it's buying at the right time. And I think now is the time to buy for a lot of people. So we'll talk about some. But yeah, if ads are still allowed, you should absolutely be making as many moves as possible to set yourself up for 2025.
Yeah, no, staying active right now is definitely key, because as you mentioned, a lot of people, at least to some degree, have started checking out the football, whether it be fully or partially. All of their attention is no longer on baseball. And there still will be plenty in your league to have full attention on baseball because it's their favorite, or they don't do football, whatever. But don't just coast right now. That is not what you should be doing, because you can, and it really depends on depth of your league. But if you're in a deeper league, then where you get a few hundred prospects rostered, maybe go out and look at who's been hot lately, some of the rising names, get some of those young breakout DSL names like Demetrio Crisantes or Jesus Made, some guys like that that are starting to make some noise. See if they're available in your league. That's really sure up the back end of your prospect roster heading into 2025. And another area I like to look at too personally is maybe start looking at some depth charts and some the contract situations, especially in the bullpen. I think that's the easiest place to look at it. Look at maybe the closer right now is going to be the free agent after the season or something like that. Maybe start getting some of these guys that could step into bigger roles in 2025. You know, like for example, maybe AJ Puck, who right now isn't getting a lot of save opportunities, and Justin Martinez is not a, you know, guy going out the door in free agency, but you get maybe getting guys like AJ Puck that could step into bigger roles in 2025. You can get a lot of good values right now, whether it be picking up guys off the waiver wire. Obviously, trading isn't open for most leagues right now, but maybe it still is. Maybe I've seen some leagues that have trading year round. Maybe you can still make a trade or two and sure yourself up for next year. But yeah, definitely stay active. This is the time of year where you can maybe sneak a few guys in that kind of get overlooked, whether it be major league guys or especially minor leaguers, especially because guys that are still contending in your league are probably looking at those major league guys as well. But you know, maybe not. Maybe you can still sneak some of those guys in or get some of the rising prospect names here. Again, it all depends on the depth of your league and how deep your league is. But yeah, definitely stay active, I think, is the big thing you can be doing here. You're not going to make wholesale changes. That's what you're looking to do. That's probably not going to happen. Without trading, you probably can't make these big wholesale changes. But just make those little changes here and there. Just get yourself in a slightly better spot going into the next year. And then once the season's over, maybe you can make some of those trades to get draft picks or other players or whatever it may be. So it's big we throw that in there to start out the show today because you know it's probably happening to some people. They're kind of wondering, what should I do now? And some falling out of it. So hopefully that helped. Now let's go into some player discussion now, starting out with two more rookies that are surging right now. We have talked about over the last few weeks, Grant McCray and Connor Norby, the latter of which just went yard twice today. Former went yard twice yesterday, or as you listen to this, would have been Sunday for Norby, Saturday for McCray. We'll start off with Grant McCray, who is a very interesting profile. I call it the FNF profile, which stands for fun and flawed, because that is definitely what Grant McCray is. I look at so far in 73 plate appearances with the Giants, 5 home runs, 3 steals, 243, 274, 529 slash line. So a good little power speed blend there. Quality of contact has been good. 18% barrel, 47% hard hit rate, EV about 93.5 on average, sprint speed in the 90th percentile. However, you look further than that and it gets pretty bad pretty quick. Walk rate 4.5%, K rate 39.7%, zone contact 67%. That would be bad for regular contact, and then his overall contact is 54.9%. That's always been an issue for him. He's always had a hard time with contact, with strikeouts, always had a decent little power speed blend throughout the minor league. But I'm wondering, can this guy even hit 230 in the major leagues with his contact and swing and miss concerns? I mean, yeah, he'll get on some runs like he is now and give you some power and speed. Yeah, he always has been that type of guy. But, Chris, yeah, I have more questions than answers here with McCray. And I think there's more red flags than green flags in this profile.
He's certainly a fun one that's started out really strong. I've never been a Grant McCray fan. I know at one point, probably 2 years ago now, where everybody was all aboard the Grant McCray train. And, he has fun power and speed. But the contact skills have always been pretty atrocious. Yeah, I would think it was 2022. He hit 21 homers and stole 35 bases. And the slash line looked pretty good, 291, 383, 525. But the contact skills then were just not good at all. He struck out 35% of plate appearances. Walks a good bit too, or at least he did. That's trended down throughout his career. I look at this profile, and I think that it's probably a streaky profile. Yeah. It honestly reminds me a lot of Rhys Hines and his little breakout that he had for a couple of weeks in midseason, and we saw how that went. Yeah, McCray has power. I don't think there's any questioning that. He has speed. Could be a fun profile, but at the end of the day, you got to make contact, and I'm not sure he can make enough contact to really make this work. I think there's obviously some underlying struggles with breaking balls, which is a concern. Like, he's just going to see more and more breaking balls. Right now, it's about 55% fastball, but as the league adjusts to him, was he going to get more breaking balls? Because he can't hit them. And you look at the whiff rate, you look at the zone contact, you look at his ability to put the ball in play regularly, and I'm just honestly not seeing it here. Sure, I think you probably add him and hope the hot streak rides out for another couple of weeks, and I just don't see it continuing personally. I don't think there's enough contact in zone. I don't think there's enough contact overall to where I feel even decent about having him on my team, like moving forward. Again, I think you always play the hot streak game and you see like, where will it take me? But look right now in double A this year, he ran a contact rate of 61%. That's pretty bad. In AAA, it actually jumped a decent bit, but it was still 68%, and it was sub 80% in zone with a 31% chase rate, higher than you'd like to see. And then obviously we mentioned the major so far, it's not good. So yeah, I'm not on the Grant McRae train at all. It's been fun. Reese Hines was even fun for a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, it's just a volatile profile that's probably not going to be continuous. I mean, a lot of peaks and valleys here.
Yeah, absolutely. And two more fun stats with McRae. He has a 23% chase contact rate, which is hilarious. And then a whiff rate of, what was it, 65.1% on breaking balls. Again, small sample size, but he struck out in 13 of his 24 plate appearances on breaking balls. So, yeah, a lot of flaws in this profile. He'll give you some power speed, but I will not be going after Grant McRae. Next one here, Connor Norby, who hit two home runs this afternoon on Sunday, now up to 8 in 110 games with a 286, 318, 590 slash line, and has been even much better for Miami since the trade in 18 games since coming from Baltimore, 329, 372, 671 slash line for Connor Norby with seven doubles and six home runs. Racking up those extra base hits, 13 in 18 games with the Fish. Another interesting profile, Chris. Pretty good sprint speed. Norby's got a really good sprint speed, 95th percentile right now. He hits the ball at ideal angles, which I think definitely helps him. Really high sweet spot rate right now. Launch angle around 17 degrees on average. Barrel rate's good, but EV is around 85 miles an hour. Contact rates are a bit low, 70% zone, 65% overall, so not quite as bad as McRae, but similar issues here. Higher K rate for Norby as well. I know you haven't been a big Norby guy when he was in prospect rankings either, but kind of where are you at on him right now?
Yeah, it's certainly been interesting to watch. Maybe it's just a thing of confidence at this point where it was really like nothing he could do could push him in the lineup every day in Baltimore. Yep. And now he's like, all right, I'm on a team where I can play every day. And I'm certainly going to make the most of it. You mentioned it, the sweet spot percentage is like top of the league right now at 47%. And the barrel rate's really good too, just given that he's sitting in the sweet spot so often. Actually, a little surprised to see the sprint speed. His clock times were certainly not 95th percentiles. It is interesting to look at that now. It's a small sample, but still, you put a sprint, that's would be a max sprint speed, and it's there. So Norby's interesting. He's been really poor in the field, though. His underlying's not great. It's a pretty high K rate. It's a pretty high chase rate. I do want to filter that a little bit, like post-Marlins trade, and kind of see like how much have things changed, because he's obviously been insane like since the trade. And I think it's been pretty fun to watch for Norby. And yeah, I'm definitely lower on him because the contact skills were average, the power was fringe average, the speed like really wasn't there. And so I just don't really see this profile being like a stud for fantasy purposes, at least. And right now he's looked that part, and yeah, you know, I'm curious. It's interesting, actually. His average EV is actually down since being traded to Miami. It was 85.1 overall, 84.5 since the trade to Miami. Max of 107. Launch angle still remains good, though. He's got some barrels. Hard hit rate of 34% since the trade. So it's actually pretty interesting to look at and see the fact that, like, it's underlying still not great, but a lot of line drives, a lot of fly balls, and a lot of pulled fly balls at that. So that's been a big thing, too. It's a 52% pull rate since the trade. It's just a 34% ground ball rate, which you look at and you're like, all right, that'll definitely play. He's been really aggressive on pitches in the zone, near 80% zone swing. The contact is still a little suspect and scary because since the trade, it's a sub 70% zone contact and a sub 65% overall. So it's just something to watch. He's still whiffing a lot, but it's hard to deny the performance. It's been pretty wild to see, and I didn't expect it. I'll say that.
No, I didn't either. I think a little higher than you on Norby, but I wouldn't say I'm high on Norby in general. I thought he was a guy that, especially when he was a second baseman, like, all right, if this guy can get like 15 to 20 home runs and 10, 12 steals or so annually, and at least hit for an average that won't kill you, like maybe even hit like 250, yeah, that could be a decent little middle infielder. Now he's over at third base with the Marlins. Berger's been DHing and playing first base primarily since Norby got there. So it looks like Norby will be over at third base moving forward. We'll see how that plays out in 2025 and beyond if they do keep him there long term, which I think they probably will. A little bit of a different look now. He's a corner infielder as opposed to a middle, though he might retain both eligibilities in certain platforms next year, which would be fun. But you know, I still have the same thoughts on Norby. I don't think the average is going to be, I'd say, capped at 260. He's probably in that 240 to 260 range. But if he can get you 18, 19, 20 home runs and 10, 11, 12 steals, again, he's not going to be a starting caliber player at either second or third. But can that be a decent corner infield option or middle if he still has that eligibility in your league next year? Yeah, I think it could. And there's no – it's a double-edged sword here. There's no – nobody taking a spot anytime soon, but also not a lot of good hitters in that lineup. The new big three, quote unquote, in Miami is him, Berger, and Xavier Edwards, who all have been hitting well lately. In terms of big three, is obviously not the great 1-2-3 in the grand scheme of things. And then you got Jesus Sanchez, Jonah Bride, Otto Lopez, Griffin Conine. So not a great lineup. So I don't want to expect a ton of like runs in RBI, but yeah, I think he can do a little bit of everything, and if he keeps the average respectable, 250 or so range, I think he can have some value. But yeah, definitely not a stud. This next guy has turned into a freaking stud, though, lately. Not lately, but really this entire season, and that's Brent Rooker with the Oakland Athletics. And we talked about Lawrence Butler recently, and I put out a tweet a few days ago that since – I forget what it was, either July 1st or June 1st, whenever Lawrence Butler started getting hot. So I want to say it was July 1st. They had, when if you look at combined runs, home runs, RBI, they barely beat out Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. This just shows how much, how much of a hot streak both these guys have been on. And at this point, after a 30 home run season from Rooker last year, he has 35 home runs, 8 steals, a 299, 373, 583 slash line this year, in 534 plate appearances with 74 runs scored and 99 RBI. So he has that outside shot at 40 home runs, like 110 RBI or so, and has the highest average OBP and slug of his career by healthy margin. I go, he only had really had last year with any semi-decent sample size of plate appearances. But, Chris, I don't think a lot of it, or really any of it's fluky. I mean, do I think he's a hit 300 moving forward? No, probably not. But his XBA is still 280. So it's not like he's way overperforming here. The power's legit. We know that. We've seen that from Rooker dating back to his days in the Minnesota Twins minor league system. And he's got 17% barrel, 92.3 average exit velocity, and a 51% hard hit rate this year. Walk rate's been stable in like the 9.5%, 10% range. Even dropped the K rate 4% this year, down to 28.7. Still high, but not terrible. So maybe I would say he's probably still more like 270 or somewhere in that range moving forward. But 270 with 35-plus home runs. And we got to remember, they're going to go into a very hitter-friendly environment next year. He's been doing this in a pitcher-friendly environment in Oakland. Now they're going into a hitter-friendly environment for at least next year or two. I'm really excited about Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler even. So, yeah, I am mostly buying in to what we've seen from Rooker this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you look across the board and everything looks legit to me. Yeah, there are some concerning like whiff in the profile, but he's continued to make it work. He makes enough contact, I think, especially in the zone where it's fine. The overall whiff rate is a little bit higher than you'd like to see. It's actually well above the MLB average, but the zone contact is much closer to league average, which does help. So that really gives him that edge. And when he gets the pitch to hit, he's going to mash it. You know, he's killing meatballs, which pitches over the heart of the plate, which you have to do. And so he's seeing his pitches. He's hitting them. He hits all pitch types extremely well, mashes fastballs, mashing sliders. He's hitting everything. And I think that's really encouraging to see. Yeah, there are some more whiff against curveballs. There's things that are a little concerning in that aspect. But at the end of the day, when you hit the ball as hard as he does, when you barrel it up consistently, like, that's going to play. And even when you strike out 28% of the time, when you have the kind of quality of contact that he does, it is all right. And he walks enough. It's not like it's so aggressive where he's not getting on base from walks. We are talking about somebody that's running a 373 OBP right now. So I am, you know, looking at his profile, I think it's legit. I think Rooker's just gotten better and better each year. 35 homers and 534 plate appearances. That's legit. So I am pretty excited about what he'll do in Sacramento and then Las Vegas, because I think it can get better.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. If he's doing this in Oakland, and I'm not saying stuff won't fall off in certain areas next year, but yeah, there's a lot of legitimacy here. Not a lot of major red flags. Contact rates are a little low, but not terrible if we talk about with other guys so far right now. And with his power, yeah, I'm very much buying what he's selling right now. Let's go over to a few guys here. We have four hitters that are performing not so well in the second half of the season. And we will start with Isak. Really, the pitchers have been working out well for the Rays, but the two kind of hitters, Morel and Paredes, have not been performing well with their new teams since the trade deadline. You look at Paredes here, looking at in the second half of the season, he's slashing 146, 286, 258 with four home runs. Still has a good walk rate and K rate, right around 12 and 15% respectively. He has the lowest average of any qualified hitter in the second half by about 20 points or so. Next one up is another guy we'll talk about here in a few minutes in Logan Ohapi. But, you know, Chris, what are you thinking with Paredes right now? Obviously, was a guy that really needed the home runs to be there because, you know, he's never hit for a high average, even though he's had some pretty good contact rates. But his batted ball profile, I think, hurts. Takes away from some of the contact skills that he does have. So it's just always been a weird profile. Everyone knows I have not been high on Paredes because I think it's very risky to depend on that type of batted ball profile to get your home runs. And yeah, he had 31 last year, but he's at 19 this year and basically the same number of plate appearances, and the slash line is much worse overall. So where are you at on Paredes right now? Would you be looking to buy low, or are you fading pretty hard at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't really love the trade, and you know, he's going to be in Chicago for a while. He's not a free agent till 2028, so he's not going anywhere. The left field wall in Chicago is 30 feet deeper than it is in the Trop, so pretty big difference. He had perfected pulling fly balls, and you look in the trade, it's not been pretty. The Statcast has dropped even more. It's 83.7 mile an hour average EV. It's a 4% barrel rate, 27% hard hit. Those numbers aren't good at all. The pulled fly, still pulling the mess out of the ball. He's not getting to as much lift. He's actually hitting the ball more pop-ups than actual healthy fly balls, which is a little discouraging. And all the contacts remain good. It's just the quality of contact has not been there. And I feared that this might be the case where I kind of want to look at the spray chart just like post trade and see what's going on here, because I do think that, again, we had seen him really perfect the ability to pull to the corner of the Trop and get to these home runs. And he was valuable. If he had stayed in Tampa Bay, there was a lot of value to be had, in my opinion, because he had that, he'd done it so well. And now he just doesn't have that home stadium, and it hurts him. So that's the concern here, is that he's here. He's in Chicago for a while. And yeah, now I'm looking at his pulled fly balls, and actually, dang, left in Wrigley's 355. It's much deeper than 310 in the Trop. Guess what? He's got a lot of fly balls that are out there that are like on the warning track. Ton of them. Just haven't left the yard. Yeah, I think the change in park hurt him. How does he evolve now? He's got to. He's got to change in order to really get back to the player that he once was.
Yeah, and that's hard to do. Changing on a fly like that during the season is damn near impossible. So maybe that's like an off-season swing adjustment he does, but does he now resort to, or does the surface stats start matching the stats under the hood? Because, again, as I said before, if you looked at just his metrics without looking at the surface stats, you'd think he's high average, low power, and that's been the exact opposite of what he's been, because he's been 89% zone contact basically every year of his career, and then overall contact's been in like the 83 to 86% range on that good walk and strikeout rate that I mentioned as well. So you'd think, like, oh, this guy's hitting 300 with 12 home runs. So you think he's like damn near Stephen Kwan, but actually, I want to compare. Actually, I bet you contact rates and quality of contact and approach are probably pretty damn close to what Stephen Kwan does, but something I'll look at later. But maybe he's going to start changing and not being the extreme pull guy because, yeah, it's, as I mentioned, when the trade happened, it's about, was it 40 feet difference, something like that. Plus, you get the crazy ass wind that usually blows in most of the time in Chicago. So, yeah, it did not like that move whatsoever. I wasn't a big Paredes guy in general. And now I'm like, okay, if he's not going to start hitting for more average, he's useless in fantasy right now. But next guy here, CJ Abrams, who I think is Abrams. Is there any middle ground with Abrams? I feel like he's either on a bender or absolute garbage. I can't. There's no in the middle with Abrams. I don't have any shares, so it hasn't really affected me really. But he was started off the year cold, then he got really hot, and now he's been really cold again since the deadline here, or even before that. I tweeted out some of his stats earlier today on Sunday, as I try to pull it up here, but he's been almost you wouldn't even want to start right now because the aggressive approach is hurting him. He's still on almost got a 20-30 season. He's one home run and two steals off of that, so he'll probably get that 20-30 season, but this is the third season in a row he's to be under 250, and the contact rates don't hint at it like a 245 hitter, but I think he's just so aggressive. And it's not to the point where he's aggressive that he strikes out a lot, because he doesn't. Kiery's been fine, but I think he just has a lot of poorly hit balls, or in terms of either quality or the direction in which they're going, and that's limited him to a degree. And yeah, he's a fun player, and when he's on, he's a top 25 guy, but you look at over his last 205 plate appearances, he's slashing 160, 224, 262, and only walking at a 4.4% clip. So, unless he starts showing a little bit more patience at the plate, I think you're going to always see these peaks and valleys. And yeah, he'll probably be at end of the year a top 50 to 75 player or something like that. And he'll be top 25 at times, but then he'll be post 250 at times for a good stretch of the season like he is now. And I just don't like that type of profile personally, so that's why I've always been a little lower on Abrams with my ranking the most and don't have any shares in him right now. But I don't know. There's still some value here, but Chris, kind of again, would you look to buy low on Abrams right now?
I don't know. I think it's reasonable to try to, but again, you mentioned it's been a lot of peaks and valleys, and at the end of the day, he's going to wind up probably going 20-30, which you look back, it's like, all right, that wasn't a bad season. But again, this is for the third straight year running the OBP around 300 or under. It's a career OBP under 300. It's another poor batting average. I don't know. I look at the profile and it's like early career Jazz Chisholm in a way where, yeah, there's upside, power, and speed, but can he make enough contact to make it work? Abrams is hyper-aggressive. It's been weird how poorly it's gone. And he was soaring up. Like, he was in some people's, like, top 15 for dynasty rankings. He never made it that high for me. But I will say it's been really hard to watch. Like, where is the performance gone? And as you mentioned, like, since July 1st, it's been pretty poor. It's a 282 slug over that span. I don't know. I just look at the profile and think there's a lot of volatility. When you're OPS in 537 over 2+ month stretch. That's pretty concerning in my book. And the underlying data's gotten worse all year. Barrel rates dropped, average EVs dropped. And watching the trends, it's not been really pretty at all. So I think at the right cost, maybe buy, but I'm not like rushing to buy CJ Abrams.
If I just sounded weird when I was finishing up my segment of talking on Abrams, I was fighting off a sneeze for like the last 10 seconds of talking. Okay, if I sounded a little, my voice sounded a little weird, it's because I hit mute and sneezed right after I finished talking and threw it over to Chris. But yeah, that's why I've never been, like I said, I've never liked that type of inconsistent profile. You know, especially if you play head-to-head, that type of profile can either win you a week or lose you a week or two. And I don't know, like, he just needs, if he could just show a little more patience, I think that would do him absolute wonders, because he's got some raw power, not like a ton, but he's got some raw power to be like a 20-homer guy. He's shown that. Obviously, he's a phenomenal athlete. So the upside is an annual 20-plus homer, 40-plus steal guy, but also the lower OBP limits the stolen base attempts. So you can get that OBP to 330 or something. Like, that'd be wonderful. But yeah, still waiting to see some of those adjustments made for CJ Abrams. Next guy here, this is a guy I do have a lot of shares of, and always have had a lot of shares of. I've always been a big fan of Luis Robert, but man, he's probably one of the most maddening players to roster, because you've seen the ups and the peaks with him. It's first-round talent. And last year, he went 38-20 in 595 plate appearances, but the downs are more there than the ups, more prominent than the ups, and more consistent than the ups. And it sucks because he can't stay healthy half the time. This year, he's at 358 plate appearances. 2022 is at 401. He's constantly always either on the IL or still, you know, dealing with something or dinged up in some way. And this year, I mean, I don't know if it's because he's checked out mentally, because the White Sox are literally the worst team in the history of baseball, which is saying something. Baseball's been around for 167 years at this point. So he's got 14 home runs, 21 steals, but 223, 275, 395 slash line. K rates soared up to 34% this year. So it's got good quality of contact, still running at a good clip. He's still got that power speed blend, but just the contact has not been there. 64% overall contact. Chase has always been really high with him. So some of these kind of warts have been more prominent this year. And I don't know. I want to stop being a Robert guy, Chris, because I know right now it's not a great time to trade him. So I might have to wait for him to recoup some of that value, hopefully early next year, and then maybe trade him in 2025. But at this point, it's just so maddening. He's still only 27, but he's also not getting any younger either. As he gets closer to 30, are these injuries going to be more and more prominent than they even are now? So I don't know. I just don't see a consistently bright future for Luis Robert moving forward. Still a great talent, but so maddening the roster.
Yeah, I think you have to look, like, even in his career season last year, there were still some concerning things. Chase rate has been very high throughout his career. The contact rates have been subpar and have actually gotten worse pretty much every year of his career. His own contact's done the same. It's just really weird to look at and watch the trend in the wrong direction. And not to mention that he's been injury plagued for a lot of his career. And now he's coming off this season. He's 27 years old. The White Sox need to trade him, but his value's lower than ever. So you have to wonder, what are they going to get at him? So he is under contract through 2025, then they have two club options. So a trade does, this offseason does give a team 3 years of him guaranteed if you want to pick up those two club options. But again, it's like you're selling so low right now. I think they had hoped that he would finish the year like extremely strong, and that would boost the trade value or give some confidence moving forward. But that really hasn't been the case. He had a little stretch in late August where it began to look better, but still, it's been really ugly to end out the year. I know he had 3 hits today as we're recording this, but again, you have to wonder, is it just fatigue? Is he checked out? Could be all the above, but yeah, the call should be depleted in redraft next year. I will probably not be buying, though, because it feels like another injury could happen, and that sucks. So I don't know. I'm Not super excited about him anymore, even though the power speed upside is there.
Where do you think, real quick, where do you think the ADP settles for him next year? Like, I'm thinking this year, where was he this year? It was...
I bet it was top 25. I'll pull it up real quick. And
yeah, I was thinking in the 20s. I want to say 32. Oh, 32.
But hold on. Was he hurt at some point? Because there is a min of or a max of 209 in there. So was there maybe some of those later drafts are included in this? Let me reset it just to preseason because that doesn't seem right to go 209. I bet there was some of the, I don't know. Yeah, it's, I'm not sure where he went 209 at, but that's pretty high. That one's weird. But anyway, 32, 30-ish ADP.
Okay. So given everything happened this year, I see him going like, maybe what, 60 to 70 range, maybe? Is that, maybe that's even too, it's so hard because there's so much talent there, but yeah, I won't be drafting him. Maybe if he falls closer to 100, which he probably won't fall that low, I would take a look at him in redraft, but yeah, I'm hoping that he just starts off hot and I can maybe dip some of my shares next year. One last player here before we get three up, three down is Logan Ohapi, who I alluded to earlier. We're still having, you know, a solid season overall, 19 home runs in 467 plate appearances, but a very kind of split profile. Everything is either in the top third of the league or the bottom third of the league. There's really nothing in the middle. Quality of contact, pretty good. 12% barrel, 90% average EV, 46.5% hard hit rate. But outside of that, the walk rate, which used to be pretty high in the minor leagues, has not been in the major leagues. It's down to 5.8%. This year, K rate is now up pushing 30% at 29.6. And the contact rates, while not terrible, are below average as well. Higher chase rate, too. I don't know, Chris. We saw Ohapi get really hot middle of the year, and he's been really cold lately. You look at since the All-Star break, Ohapi has a 41% strikeout rate in 152 plate appearances, 164, 230, 279 slash line. Does have 5 home runs, but kind of doesn't really make up for the rest of it here. Third lowest WRC plus, only better than Brandon Drury and the aforementioned CJ Abrams. Where are you at on Ohapi long term? I mean, I still think he could be like a back end top 10 catcher for fantasy, but these issues that we've seen that again weren't really big issues for him in the minors, I think keeps him out of ever being top 5 consideration.
Yeah, this one's weird. Part of me wonders if he's hurt because he was really good through the first couple months of the season. Through the end of June, it was 275, 326, 478 slash, 12 home runs. Everything looked pretty good under the hood. It was a 91 mile an hour average EV, an 11% barrel rate, a 48% hard hit rate. Like, those numbers are really good. And then it's fallen off. And so part of me wonders if it was an underlying injury because, again, I look at the other plate discipline metrics. It was an 84% zone contact in those first 3 months of the year. 71% contact's about league average. It's not really what you want to see, but just kept going downhill. And actually, even through, I'm trying to look, yeah, even through the end of July, the numbers still looked really good on the surface. And he hit up to 15 home runs at that point. He was still hitting 281. All the StatCast data was still there at that point. The plate discipline still there. But something happened at some point, and it's really caused him to fall off. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't have any direct insight if he's been playing hurt or not. But I do know that something's off. To be that good all year and then just to randomly see the fall off is really strange because – you look, and yeah, since the start of August, 113, 175, 236, that 43% strikeout rate you mentioned is just really weird to see. The contact rate's dropped about 10 percentage points. The zone contact rate has dropped about 7 percentage points. So there's been a significant drop there. When you see the, you know, StatCast, it's actually so bizarre because the barrel rate's at 18%. Since the start of August. That's so weird to look at. It's just, I guess he's just not making contact at all. So when he's making contact, he's still barreling it up because 17.5% barrel rate's elite, 46% hard hit rate over that span, still really good. 90.5 mile an hour average EV. It's just, I don't know. I'm perplexed right now. by the lack of contact, how it's just falling off, but he's still hitting the ball with authority. And you have to think he may get back to that contact that he once was. And maybe it is a good buying opportunity on Logan Ohapi.
Yeah, I think it is. Like I said, I think he's still a top 10 caliber player. I think the contact rates, the whole profile there, I think it's better. It can be better than what we've seen so far. He's not going to be a 280 hitter or anything like that, but I think he could hit at least 250, 260, 20-plus home runs, and that's a top 10 catcher right there. If he's hitting, let's say, 255 with 24 home runs, that's a top 10, back-end top 10 catcher for sure. So yeah, I would look to buy low on Ohapi if the perceived value in your league has dropped enough, which it probably has. All right, let's close up the show with three up, three down pitchers this week. Got a fun group of six here, starting with Kumar Rocker. Obviously, one of the more fun pitchers in minor league baseball, and was a college standout at Vanderbilt, third overall pick in the 2022 draft to the Texas Rangers. Been an interesting last 3 years or so for Rocker, but he's been absolutely dominant since getting back to AA Frisco in late July. He has made seven starts since then and has a 0.91 ERA in 29 and two-thirds innings. Only allowed 13 hits, 3 runs, 4 walks, and 47 strikeouts. He has at least 8 strikeouts in 4 of his last 5 outings, including a 10-strikeout gem in his first AAA start. Last 2 starts have been with AAA Round Rock. Went 5 innings, 1 hit, 0 runs, 0 walks, 10 Ks in his debut on the 28th. And then just on Friday, 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. So really dominant right now. He's looking just as good or even better than he did back at Vanderbilt and absolutely flying up prospect rankings right now. Chris, where are you pushing? How high are you pushing Kumar Rocker in your rankings right now?
I think I had him in the 30s in this recent update overall. So that's, I need to look and see exactly where that is as far as pitching prospects go, but it's definitely in the top 10. He's one of those guys that he's back. He looks better than ever. I know you can point to the risk and say he's had a terrible injury history, but I think we could say that about any pitching prospect at this point. And you look at what Rocker's done, it's been pretty elite. I've got him 36 overall, and that is good for SP7 among pitching prospects. You just look at what Rocker's done this year, and you can't deny the arsenal results, whatever. But you look at the arsenal, and it's like, oh my goodness, this is just spectacular. I think the mechanics are as clean as they've been since his days at Vanderbilt, like when he was at peak. I think he's better. I think he's better right now than he's ever been in his life. And I think that right now it looks good. The fastball sits 97, 99. He's touched near triple digits. It's, you know, good horizontal movement. It's got some good ride from his release point. It's 7 feet of extension. It's a gyro slider around 90 that gets whiffs. The strike throwing, I think, is what's impressed me, is that he's come out and he's thrown a ton of strikes. Rocker's arsenal looks good. The mechanics look good. He looks healthy. He looks ready to go. So I am very in on this profile. He's in AAA. I think he's pretty much ready for the majors at this point. I think we'll see him pretty early next year.
Yeah, I think so too. And this is a guy that he's going to be 25 in November. And I don't think they want to waste bullets with him in the minor leagues. Obviously, not promote him up there right now, but I do think by end of May next year, he's probably up. And hell, maybe if strong spring, maybe he even makes the team out of camp. I won't put that, you know, past them at all. But yeah, Kumar Rocker, I fully admit I didn't go high enough in my last update on him, and definitely am correcting that this round in September. So right now I have him at, let's see, 66 overall. And that is my SP9 right now. I don't have a lot of pitchers in my top 40. I only have 3 in my top 40 overall. So I think I push them down a little bit more than most. But he's still my SP9. All right, Chris, who are the 6 you have ahead of him?
Okay, Schultz, Painter, Jobe, Bubba Chandler, Chase Dolander and Quinn Matthews.
Okay, that's what I thought you had there. I was going to ask you who you had, who you got here with some of those guys, but yeah, he's definitely in that range for sure. I think he's up to, I tweeted out like last week that he was in my tier three of pitching prospects, and I have him in tier two right now. Tier one for me is Joe Painter and Schultz, and then tier two is Bubba, it's Matthews, it's Sikora, it's Rocker. I'd even throw Dolander and Burns in that mix, but it's a pretty sizable tier two right now. It blends into tier three as well. But yeah, Rocker, that slider is absolutely filthy. He's popping them in. His fastball has been really good lately as well. And the fact that he's just commanding, that's the thing that's been the issue for his former Vanderbilt teammate with Leiter. He's been, just command has gotten him. Leiter's got good stuff as well, not as good as Rocker, but Rocker only has four walks in his last 29 and two-thirds innings. Commanding's pitch is much better, throwing much more strikes than Leiter is, which is really encouraging to see. So yeah, I'm definitely continuing to push him way up in my rankings, as is everyone else at this point. The first down is a guy that was a breakout earlier in the year. He was rising up rankings a ton with Matthews, with Sproat and Zebby and all them earlier this year, but has not continued that as the rest of them have. That's George Klassen, who in five starts since being traded to the Angels has a 771. Actually, technically, he has six starts, but one of those was in low A. I'm not going to count that. Looking at the five double A starts with the Angels, 771 ERA and a 214 whip with as many walks as strikeouts, 18 of each in 18 and two-thirds innings. So taking a pretty sizable step back with the production here, Chris. So where are you at with Klassen? Like, you was the guy we saw earlier in the year when he was a big breakout. Who is that, the real Klassen, or was that a little bit of fool's gold, so to speak? And where do you fall on Klassen now?
I think that, honestly, I've always been a little concerned it was reliever-esque. It's pretty violent delivery, the strike throwing, some inconsistencies, and I always had my worries that Klassen might be a reliever. And it's interesting because they initially, after the trade, sent him to single A from high A. They bumped him down, and yeah, he was good, but then went to double A because the Angels don't utilize high A at all, and he's shown some struggles. He's not throwing strikes at all. Is it possible that it's fatigue? Sure, but he's not missed bats either. It's a fun arsenal, and I think it could be fun in a bullpen, but yeah, I certainly have my concerns with Klassen at this point, and I think that it's not really a new concern. I know we could easily point in a small sample, but it's something that's always been a concern for me, is that would he be a reliever long-term? Because we've seen the strike rate go down at every level. He missed a lot of bats in high A, but now in double A, he's not really fooling anybody. Kind of curious to see how he comes out next year. But yeah, right now I am definitely concerned.
Yeah, and really, his last year in college wasn't great. Don't go off of stats entirely, but he had almost as many walks and strikeouts as last year of college. 47 walks to 49 strikeouts in 56 and two-thirds innings with an ERA near six. But obviously, the stuff is good. The stuff is fun, which is why he got drafted. And he showed that earlier in the year, and he's still showing that now. But yeah, the fact that the command and control profile, not the greatest with Klassen. He hasn't been used in the bullpen yet. All 20 of his outings have been starts this year, but I kind of wonder, maybe does that kind of shift over next year? Could the Angels start using him more in the bullpen role and maybe even bring him up next year in that kind of capacity? We'll see, but yeah, I'm not like dropping him way down my rankings, but he's been steadily dropping the last few updates now. Next up here, we're going with Jackson Baumeister, who went from Baltimore to Tampa Bay and one of the trade deadline deals, second round pick in last summer's draft out of Florida State University. Nice big starter's frame, 6'4", about 225. And he's been pretty good all year, especially since the trade, five starts and two relief appearances since the trade. So total of 29 innings, when he allowed 12 hits, four earned runs with five walks and 44 strikeouts. Whip of 0.59 and an ERA of 1.24 Again, that is just since the trade. But some pretty fun stuff with Baumeister Chris. Big fastball, couple of breakers, changeup lags behind a little bit. The guy that can miss bats, and he's showing some improved command and control this year as well. So definitely a name on the rise.
It's really not been until the trade to Tampa where he had any control, because he should put up really concerning strike rates in Baltimore's org. I saw him throw a start in Asheville when Aberdeen was down this way, and it wasn't. Yeah, the stuff is fun. He's got a hammer of a curveball. Fastball is good. He introduced a new cutter with the Rays org, but also when you see somebody jump, 59% strike rate with Baltimore, which is well below average, 63-ish% is around average. He's been at 69%, a 10% jump in strike rate. So I went to the data. I was looking at the release points. I was like, something has to change. Like, I literally spent a long time diving in on him earlier this week or last week at this point. And it's so bizarre because nothing's changed. His release points are identical. The fastball actually has seen about 1 inch of IVB increase. Can't figure out why. It's exactly the same release spot. He's throwing harder. That introduction of the cutter has been interesting. He had a start two starts ago. I think it was the 11K start against Greenville when Greenville was in Bowling Green. He threw 84% fastball cutter. And the cutter is a new pitch. Like he added the cutter since the trade to the Rays. But curveball is a hammer. His changeup's actually really good. He doesn't throw it all that often, but gets really good horizontal. It's like 16 plus inches of fade with pretty good depth to it. Like, I think once he figures out the sequencing, he's pretty heavy four seam fastball usage. Once he figures out a good sequence, this could be nasty. And yeah, if the control sticks, I'll say, if he's still throwing strikes at even an average clip, if he comes out next year and he's just like 63% strike, he's a top 100 prospect. I believe in the arsenal that much. He's got four really good pitches at this point. That cutter's really valuable. The four seam is a really good offering. And the curveball is 60 plus inches of vertical drop. It's a incredible, beautiful 12-6 curveball. And like I said, I like the change a lot too. So always come down to strike throwing for him. And now all of a sudden, he's found it. Does it stick? I guess we'll see, but I'm really intrigued and I'm getting Baumeister. I think he's the one I talked about earlier in the episode. Like, something changed, and get in on him now because there could be a lot of helium this offseason.
Yeah, he's exactly the type of guy that you should be taking the chance on now. Maybe it doesn't stick. If it doesn't, you didn't pay a lot to get him, whether you probably just picked him up depending on your league depth or traded a smaller piece for him. But if it works out, that's potential huge ROI there. I think there's a pretty split camp on how Tampa did with their moves this deadline, but they got some fun players between him, Brody Hopkins, Aiden Smith, etc. They got some fun talent there, and we'll see. Obviously, some of those guys are still a couple years away. We shall see what they turn out to be, but definitely got a lot of fun profiles for sure, and Jackson Baumeister is one of them. Second down here, we're going to the Mets with Brandon Sproat. Second rounder in last year's draft out of the University of Florida. Actually, they drafted him 2 years in a row. They drafted him in the third round the previous year, but he went back to Gainesville for another year. And Sproat is a guy that is pretty much ranked the top 10 prospect, or excuse me, top 10 pitching prospect by a lot of people right now. But AAA has been a little tough on him, even dating back to his last few starts in AA. When he gave up three runs in five innings, then ended his tenure there with a gem, 13 strikeouts over five shutout innings. But in his five AAA starts here, it's been pretty rough. Now, his last outing was good, and he pitched okay today, but overall ERA is at 6.75 in AAA and only 17 strikeouts in 22 and two-thirds innings. K-Rich ticked down. It's not even like a walk rate soaring thing like we've seen with others in AAA. He's just getting hit around a lot right now. 273 batting average against and a 523 slug against in his five AAA starts. So, you know, have you lost any kind of faith in Sproat as you get back down your rankings, Chris? Or are you still as high on him as you were before he got to AAA?
I still like him a lot. Like, I'm not docking him at all. I think that myself and a lot of people probably had gotten a little overly excited about what he had done. I think the Arsenal's good, don't get me wrong, but was he like a top-tier pitching prospect? Probably not, but he's still a really solid pitching prospect. I think that you can look at what he's done, and I think you can probably look and say, okay, he's probably somewhere in between what he did in AA and then obviously not close to what he's done so far in AAA, but it's a big adjustment. Hitters are substantially better in AAA, and you look at it, and he's had some decent starts, and his last start was much better last time out. He went 5 1/3 scoreless innings, 6K, 2 walk. But what's interesting is you're looking at strike throwing, his locations, and you got to hit your spots a lot better. He was overpowering guys in AA and could afford to miss spots. But with AAA, you've got a lot of guys that, even though you could say quad A, whatever, these are guys with major league experience quite often. And it's a little bit of different competition level, just being able to throw your pitches and hit your spots. Like, you just got to be confident. And I think that this is the first time all year that he's been challenged. He got lit up in his first AAA start. So then it's back to the drawing board, figuring out where do you go from here. And he's, I would say, of his 5 AAA starts, 3 of them have been really bad, 2 pretty solid ones. So I think he'll be fine. Like, I think I've got him still as a top 10 pitching prospect. I don't want to change the valuation that much, but it's looking at it and saying, okay, I need to see the adjustments here, and I need to see you hit your spots consistently. Do I think Sproat can be really good? Yeah, absolutely. Do I think that he really only set himself back a small bit? Yeah, I think he was going to be called up this year. Now, it's not going to happen most likely, but I do expect him to be up early in 2024. 2025. Yeah. Wow, 2024 is almost over.
I do it all the time, too. It's weird that we're almost near the end of 2024, at least for the regular season, and we can start talking about 2025 now. But, yeah, I still have him as a top 10 pitching prospect as well. At least I believe I do. Let me see where I have him in my rankings. Let's see. Yeah, he is currently my I have him 10 right on the dot. But, again, he's in a massive cluster with guys like Dolander, who I have a little bit ahead, Tink Hance, Chase Burns, guys like that. Kind of at the end of that second, third tier that, again, is blending together at this point. And then there's a little bit of a drop-off down to guys like Waldrip and Mizorowski and Hagen Smith and guys like that. But, yeah, I still have him. I still think he's going to be a pretty good back-end SP2, high-end SP3 type of guy. And, you know, proximity obviously is there as well. If anybody's been questioning is, was his season legit, or is he as good as we thought he was, and that causes the perceived value to drop in your league this offseason, I wouldn't mind buying for 90 cents on the dollar, so to speak. Our third and last up of this episode, we're going to the Philadelphia Phillies with Moises Chassé, who did give up 7 runs in his last outing on Friday, but in his 4 outings before that was really good, including back-to-back double-digit strikeout performances in his previous 2 starts, where he went 6 innings, 1 hit, 0 runs, 0 walks, 13 Ks, and then 10 Ks and 4 2/3 in the outing before that. So those 4 starts leading up to his last start, which would have been his last in high A and first 3 double A, 20 2/3 innings, only 10 hits, 4 runs allowed, 6 walks, and 36 strikeouts, 174 ERA, and a 147 batting average against. This is a guy that goes back to some of the guys you should be on the lookout for right now if you're falling out of it, because there's not a lot of helium right now, Chris, on Moises Chassé. You know, 21 years old, and he's got some pretty fun stuff. So definitely a guy that could continue rising up rankings in 2025.
Yeah, he's been a fun arm. Another one that I saw in the Orioles org when Aberdeen was down this way. And, you know, it was hit or miss with him. The fastball is pretty unique. I'll say it's a very flat plane. It gets a lot of carry to it, and it's hard to pick up for hitters. And so you look at that, and that sets up the whole arsenal. So that's obviously an encouraging thing to start your arsenal with. And considering he's so young, it also really helps. He just turned 21, and he's in AA, and he's pitching pretty well. And you can, I would say, you can probably write off this start that 7-run, 5-earned start. It was a really odd start. I just had some things that didn't go his way, some errors. And we have to think about the fact that they're honestly, like, fielding in minor league baseball is not great. But again, like, looking at Moises Chace as a whole, like, I just really think this can be a dude who probably pops up next year. And you look back and say, what do we miss? But he's done it all year this year, where it's 124 strikeouts to 40 walks in 80 innings. So really the biggest thing for me is, can you build up and throw enough innings? Because the stuff's off the charts. It's the mid-90s fastball I mentioned. It's very high IVB, good arm side run. He's got a really good sweepy slider that's like up to 15, 16 inches of sweep. Changeup has good fade, good separation from the fastball. Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see where this goes, and I'm taking my shot.
All right, one more here to close out the show, our third down. Going to the major leagues in this one, but he's still a prospect, and that is Zebby Matthews with the Minnesota Twins. You know, one of the bigger breakouts this year, and one that I think everyone was really in on. I didn't really see anybody that wasn't in on Matthews, and if you were, I didn't see it, but hasn't looked too good so far in the major leagues with Minnesota. He had three decent starts, really, to start, actually. 5 innings in each of his first 3 starts, 2 earned, 1 earned, but his last 2 have been pretty bad. 2 innings, 9 runs. We allowed 3 home runs against Toronto, so not a really good lineup there, even though Vladdy's been going out of his mind in the second half of the season. And then against Kansas City on Friday, a team that lost Vinny Pasquantino and has been overall kind of struggling as a team over the last couple of weeks offensively. 5 innings, 9 hits, 4 earned. Hasn't really been striking out a ton of guys so far. He does have a strikeout per inning right now, but in a below average K rate at 21.2%. He's doing his usual thing, only a 2.9% walk rate. That's definitely always going to be there. But again, Chris, it's only 5 starts, and really the last 2 starts that have been bad that have inflated a lot of the surface stats here. But has your overall outlook on Zebby really changed at all, given his first 5 starts in the majors for you?
No, I just think that he's got to learn to nibble a little more. His command's too good, and Zebby really loves throwing in the strike zone. And I think that's got to be something that you look at and say, okay, you got to be comfortable missing a little bit, trying to get hitters to chase, because right now he's not really fooling anybody. I do think there's some encouraging signs under the hood. Obviously, still, you know, the command's been spectacular. He's throwing a lot of strikes. He's, you know, limiting hard contact to an extent. But at the end of the day, major league hitters are going to take advantage of you if you live in the zone too much and throw too many strikes. So I just look at it. I think it's a case where he's going to be fine long term. I just want to see Zebby really focus on missing a little bit more, and not missing per se, but you got to throw less into the zone, especially with certain pitch types. Try to get some chase on the breaking balls. Don't be afraid to spike one down and away. It's like, you got to live that way in the majors or you're going to get hit around. So I do think that we probably see some natural regression as he's run higher BABIPs. It's been lower strand rates, really high home run to fly ball. So no, I think Zebby will be fine. I think this is a good taste for him to really work through some things and then potentially be better in 2025.
Yeah, I still have him as a top 10 pitching prospect, and he's definitely right in that tier two for me. I'm still as high on him as I was a month or two ago when he debuted. And I think the upside, this is high, and I hate doing it, but it's easy to go to. It's George Kirby. I think there's a lot of similarities between he and George Kirby. I think if everything clicks, you could be looking at another George Kirby type of arm. Obviously, that's a higher 90th percentile outcome, but definitely has the upside to get to that range. And hopefully he can miss a few more bats. Then Kirby's been chilling in that 23-24% range. So remains to be seen if Zebby is that type of guy. Can he, you know, miss more bats than that? We shall see. But yeah, everything's been getting hit around way too hard right now. All 5 of his offerings have a slug allowed over 500 right now, and 3 are over 590. So those 3 are his 3 less used pitches. But Yeah, if he can start, yeah, like you said, going out of the zone a little bit more, getting hitters to chase. And the chase rate's not terrible, but it is a little bit below league average. The zone contact rate's a little high. Overall contact rate's a little high. So really just figuring out the best way to maximize his arsenal, because he's got good stuff. He's just relying on pinpoint command and doesn't have a good arsenal, because he definitely does. And I think you'll start seeing that kind of come out more and more. Maybe it won't be until next year at this point, but I think he should get at least a few more starts this year. Probably not in their rotation for the postseason, but who knows? But it's still very high on Zebby Matthews moving forward. So again, another guy that if you could buy low this offseason, definitely would look to do. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will see you again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.